Welcome to Criminal Thinking Deterred with Tony Moore, where we explore strategies, programs, and people who work to change the destructive thinking that leads to criminal behavior. In this podcast, Tony speaks with Jay James from the Bridge Ministry in Central Virginia. This ministry transforms the lives of troubled men and their families through an innovative Christian program.
Hello, I'm Tony Moore, and welcome to another Criminal Thinking Deterred. Here we talk about how to take responsibilities for your decisions, stop hurting people, begin ministering to others, and end the criminal thinking that deters everyone. I'm here with my producer, Philip Day, for another fresh podcast. So glad that you joined us today. It's Mr. Jay James, the Bridge Ministry from Buckingham, Virginia, who will give us a great insight on what he does in the prison system out there. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tony. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us. We're honored to be here.
Yes, sir. Well, we first want to start off by saying it's really refreshing to hear that someone is doing some faith-based ministry out there in Virginia, because we know that on the East Coast, there's some hard criminal behavior out there that is affecting young folk and old folk. So we want to begin by, tell us a little bit about what the Bridge Ministry is and who it serves.
Sure. Again, thank you, Tony. It's a great question. You know, the Bridge Ministry has been around for about 25 years, and it actually started with an ex-offender and in partnership with a sitting circuit court judge at the time. So there was a partnership between the system and someone who had been through the system to create this program. And William Washington is our founder and executive director. And about 25 years ago, as he had been in a position where he was facing 17 years, he would say it this way, three-time loser, you know, the way that we, terms like that we use in the system. And he received an opportunity from a judge by the name of Jay Sweat in the Charlottesville area, who was a circuit court judge at the time. And I'll never forget the way the story plays out, that Jay offered William an opportunity to go into a program called New Life for Youth. And from that, and him graduating from that program and a number of things that happened in his life, which is all detailed in his book. He has a book called His Grace is Sufficient and another book called People, Places, and Things. And I know the story pretty well because he's kind of a father figure in my life, so I can speak to it. But to make a long story short, at the beginning of this podcast, just the wonderful things that happened in his life, and he was motivated, as I think you talk about a lot, Tony, on this podcast, that once you've received an opportunity, make sure you give that opportunity to others. Make sure you go and you give back and you teach people how to overcome criminal thinking and the types of behaviors that put them in adverse situations, and to show them that they can turn their lives around, because he did it. He's a walking testimony of how that happened. So he's where it starts. It started 25 years ago, and we have served thousands of men in the Central Virginia area. And basically, our success rate is 81% of guys who finish. We have an 18-month residential program for treating substance abuse, overcoming incarceration. All right. And 81% of our guys who finish the 18 months go on to no recidivism and sobriety. But we don't count that unless they've been doing that for 2 years. If they have 6 months of sobriety and then they go back and reoffend, they don't count towards our success rate. 73% of everybody who enrolls finishes the program. You know, some guys who don't finish the program because of any number of things that can happen. So that's been our focus. It's been a joy to be a part of it. As we talk, I'll be happy to tell you how I got involved with it. My family is a big reason why I became involved in this work, but we're thankful to be able to do it and to see, Tony, as you know, there's nothing like seeing someone turn their life around and discover who they were truly meant to be. They were not meant to be incarcerated. They were not meant to be in a behavior pattern that's destructive. And that's what we try to show the brothers that we work with.
Yeah, one of the things that we use here in our programs for criminal thinking is one of my first questions to individuals in the program is, what is preventing you from reaching your full potential? And for some reason, that logical question always pushes them to say, hold up, wait a minute. There's more to me than this. What program do you do or what do you do with the program? Are you a facilitator or are you a counselor? What's your thing into it?
All of the above, Tony. Okay. I'm our admissions director and our deputy director. So I'm the guy. I will go to a facility and interview applicants who are incarcerated, who are trying to become a part of our program. I will teach classes as well. And then I'll work in some of the administrative leadership of our program. But, you know, what we talk about a lot, Tony, is things I'm sure you talk about too. Accountability. And yes. You can't change it until you can see it. You can't change it.
Yeah.
And we treat addiction, but we really don't treat addiction. We treat addicted behavior.
Yes.
We believe that if you change the behavior, you can kill the addiction. And a perfect example is we've all heard of these 30-day and 90-day programs that you dry out from alcohol, you get clean from cocaine or methamphetamines or heroin or opiates or whatever it is. You get clean for 30 to 60 days, and then you go back out. And if you can't get the opioids, you pick up something different. So Is it the substance abuse or is it your behavior that's driving the substance abuse? Now, there can be all kinds of things connected to that: pain, rejection, hurt, brokenness. We deal with all of that. But the starting place for us is we can't change what we can't see. So we got to see what we've been doing first and the impact that it's had on our families, the people that are connected to us. As our director would say, Mr. Washington, we got to see ourselves before we see anything else, because We have conversations like this in Buckingham. If I can be frank, Tony, we'll have a conversation like this where we'll say, listen, no one made you go meet the drug dealer. No one forced you to do that. You did it. You know, I know you got all these excuses about what happened with mom and what happened with dad. And we don't discount those reasons. But at the end of the day, we have to take accountability for the decisions that we made.
Yes.
In order to move forward. So that's kind of, from a counseling standpoint, that's where we start. We start with, let's see ourselves first before we start looking at others and blaming others. And you get a lot of that, obviously, because it's painful. One of the hardest things about our program is that we will be there to support you, but we're going to make you look at yourself. We're going to make you look at the things that's been going on in your life. I tell young people, and we go 18 and up, and I tell them all the time when I talk to them and I interview them about coming into our program, I said, listen, the reason we're so successful is because it's not easy by any means. It's intensive. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let you get away with excuses of why you did things, but we're going to help you examine why you did it, and we're going to help you change that behavior pattern. So that's where we have to start. We have to start by saying, I am the problem, not anybody else that I'm connected to. And once I see that, then I can begin to make the changes. And the other thing, Tony, we often have guys, and I think this is a general philosophy we have, they want to change. They just don't know how. It's not that they don't want to change. They've never been taught a method of how to get out of that cycle of brokenness, of how to get out of the drug lifestyle, how to get out of going back to jail over and over again and doing the same thing and hoping that it'll change without someone helping them to see a different way to look at it.
I think criminal thinking, the curriculum offers that because it gives you an alternative to look at your own thinking. Okay, it's your accountability. Look at your criminal thinking. Look at the behavior goes behind your thinking. How is it productive to get you where you're trying to go? And if it's illogical, if it's irrational thinking, once you start helping someone understand that that's your responsibility, it seems to do well. When you guys deliver criminal thinking, do you do it in from assignments, or do you just break down the areas of thinking and use a deterrence, or how do you go into the process?
Sure. It's all of the above, Tony. I mean, great question. I think we offer group courses and individual counseling on our campus. In the 18-month program, it's a 17-acre residential campus in rural Virginia in Buckingham County. And there's a couple of phases to it. The first 12 months on our program, you're on our residential campus. The last 6 months, you have an opportunity to go to our halfway house, which is in the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, where we would make sure you have employment and you would still be under our supervision for that final 6 months, but you can begin financial literacy, saving money, transitioning back into the community, doing all of those things. So when you're on our residential campus, that's where the work begins that you're talking about, Tony. So we've got classes called Overcoming Addictive Behavior. We do a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy. So we're looking, so there's a classroom structure of looking at the patterns of your behavior. I mean, as simplistically as saying, listen, you did these things over and over and over and over again, yet you're claiming that not only that was not your intention, but that you've changed. And we would say, well, if you've changed, when we look at your life and your behaviors, that doesn't add up. So I tell our guys all the time, Tony, I said, look, we're not at Stanford or MIT. This is not going to be hard to get. We're going to take a simplistic look at this.
Okay.
At your behavior and the way that you've been thinking about this and how you have been so externally focused and you haven't been able to look inward as to who's making the decisions and who's bringing the challenges. And I can tell you, one of the most productive times we have is when we start talking about family relationships in our cognitive behavioral therapy courses. When we start looking at the impact of our decisions on family members. And that is a powerful thing because it's almost like you got to sand off the top of some of the ways we've been thinking before you can get to the root of some of these things to say, you say you love your mother. Why'd you steal from her? You say you love your kids. Why'd you leave them? You say that you want to be a productive member of our community, but you've been going out and you've been breaking the law. And one of the things I ask a question of our guys sometimes when they're coming in, I'll ask them, they'll say, yeah, I really want to be in your program. I say, okay, well, let me ask you something. Are you good at taking direction? And they'll say, yeah, absolutely. I can follow your rules. I said, really? Well, I'm talking to you. You're incarcerated. So clearly you have a problem with following the rules.
Yes, sir.
And they'll pause for a moment. And that's when we begin our work, Tony, because I can come in and say, listen, my friend, that was not to hurt you. That's just to give you an example of how we're going to talk, the kind of conversations that we're going to have to help you be able to see that there's a different way to do this than the way that you've been living. So it's in group counseling. Then we have individual mental health counseling where you can really get into some of the personal stuff, you know, some of the reasons, some of the pain of why you may have made some of the decisions that you made.
How do you distinguish the mental health criminal thinker from just the normal illogical criminal thinker?
That's a great question. I kind of leave that for our counselors themselves. But I would think one of the ways they do it is we use, and I appreciate the platform to say this, we use a two-tier approach. Because we're a faith-based program, we are 10% spiritual and 90% practical application. So what that means is in that 90%, there's a clinical way to look at if someone has a real kind of personality disorder. We have a clinical counselor with 30 years of experience. And we had to send one of our guys back to the system. We hated doing it, but we were not equipped to deal with what he needed clinically. And you have to sometimes as a program, you have to identify what you can do and what you can't do. Yeah. And he had some things going on from a mental health standpoint that we were not equipped with our staff to take care of. So we did our best for him after we were working with him for a few months and we had to ultimately send him back to where he came from as far as getting to our program. So it's really, we have a clinical counselor, we have a spiritual counselor, and then we have our teachers in our group sessions.
Okay.
The clinical counselor, each student that comes in, they fill out a risk assessment when they come into the program initially. And that tells them, that looks at family relationships, mental health issues, behavior patterns. And then our clinical counselor can look at that and he can diagnose them with any type of mental or personality disorder or mental impairment that might be going on versus the rest of the staff who can help to just deal with somebody who has a criminal thinking behavior problem, you know, that is just in general, they're breaking the law because they, you know, I hear it all the time. Guys who say to me, well, I felt like I needed to sell drugs because I needed to support my family. And we go, okay, that's trying to get to the right place the wrong way, because there's a couple of consequences with that. What if the drug deal goes bad and you're killed? Can you help your family anymore? You're incarcerated. Can you help your family anymore? So while you may have had the intention of helping your family, you're looking at this the wrong way. And so there's a distinguish between the guy who really doesn't understand what he's doing versus the guy who does understand what he's doing, but because of his thought process that has to be retrained, he's looking at it the wrong way. So we try to address all of those different things when we're down on our facility.
Okay. And given the challenges that you didn't have with the mental health, what are some of the success stories that you have gotten out of your program?
Oh, man. So many. I had a gentleman, I'll tell you one story because I could tell you stories for days, but mm-hmm. I had one young man, he was about 26 years old and he was addicted to opiates. And when he came in, you know, the best way I can describe it, Tony, he looked like someone that unfortunately could hurt a lot of people, you know, with a bomb or any number of things just because of the nature of where he was at mentally. He was very broken. He, very, very low self-esteem, mentally, just cognitively was not thinking in the right way and was very addicted to medication, which we know is a very big problem in our society with the opioid epidemic. And he got to a place and he went through a number of things on our property, but as he finally got to a place that he could be honest, he committed some rules infractions on our facility. And normally those would get you kicked out. But our director used his discernment and decided that this was a time not to kick this young man out, that this was a time to show this young man some mercy and some understanding, because that's something he really hadn't experienced in his life with the things he had done. And one of the reasons he got that, he was honest about the rules he had broken. And so when he brought it to us, one of the things we tell our guys, if you're honest, you'll get a number of chances with us. Just be real about where you're at. That's how we grow. That's how we move forward. So when he did that, everything started to change for him. He did that about 6 months into his tenure. From that, he started to grow aggressively. We put him in vocational training that helped him earn a career. He is now a logger in rural North Carolina. This is someone who has a career, who can sustain a family. He already has a young child. And he's doing great. And before he came to the program, he was addicted to medication, incarcerated, and he had never done anything but pretty much work in fast food. And now he has a career because it started with him not only changing his criminal thinking, but him getting to a place to be honest with himself and then honest with us and being willing to take the direction to change. And Michael today is doing fantastic. And he is, he's in his career. And we got a ton of stories like that. I have another guy named Tracy, who, when I picked him up on August 22nd, 2016, self-esteem was so low. He was a multiple offender of drug possession and incarceration. He had been in the penitentiary system as well as the jail system. And he was just really defeated. And I remember when I picked him up from the facility, He didn't even really want to talk. He always had his head down. It wasn't much he wanted to say. But he had made a decision even before he came in our program that he really did want to change. But once again, Tony, he just didn't know how. He had been in the same cycle over and over again. So he really started to engage in our group sessions. He started to listen and he started to challenge himself. And he started to grow pretty quickly. And he grew quickly for about the first 7 or 8 months. And then around month 9, he hit a snag because some of that stuff, those root issues in him that led to a lot of that behavior, that stuff started coming out. And as you know, Tony, when it starts coming out, it doesn't come out pretty.
No.
And we started seeing anger, aggression, you know, some of the things he was dealing with. But we were there to support him through it because he wanted to change. So as we helped him to look at that and work through those issues, he turned a corner. And right today, Tracy not only graduated February 22nd of 2018, he is now one of the members of our staff, and he is responsible for overseeing our halfway house. He's responsible for overseeing an aspect of operations on our property, and he is. And now you can't keep him quiet. You know, he'll say, and again, we're a faith-based program, so he will say to you, he said, I'll tell you about what God did for me. You know, and you, if you want to listen, he'll do the same thing for you. And he, and I'll be in class sometimes. I'll say, Tracy, thank you, sir. I appreciate your testimony. I got to move on. But to take someone who barely could lift his head.
Yes. Yes.
Now who's standing on 2 feet, you know, with a ton of confidence. And the thing I didn't share with you, of course, because of his offenses, he had lost his license. He had lost a lot of rights. We helped him get his license back, and we helped him purchase a car. Mm-hmm. So now he has a vehicle. He has his license that he can work in our staff, and he can give back to the program. And he's just been a great blessing to our guys. So we have guys over the years that we've served that are now, you know, CEOs at different corporations, and because they were all willing to change the way that they thought. And it just took being willing to listen to a new direction.
So let me ask you this then. How does the criminal change when it's faith-based driven? How does that, when you give the Christian view of it and you offer that to people who come out of the streets from demon-led incidents, from heavy, I don't believe God will do this for me. How does that Christian faith change them? What does it do for?
Tony, that's a fantastic question, my friend. And I would say there's a couple of things. Number one, relationship and not religion. I think a lot of times you find in the streets, and people are looking at churches and looking at Christians, and they're seeing them talk holy and not live holy, unfortunately.
Yes.
One of the things that we do is it's time for you to get a real relationship with God to change your heart when you come down to the Bridge program. So what we do, like I was talking about earlier, we're 10% spiritual because we don't want you to know 10 scriptures. We want you to live 2.
Mm-hmm.
And live the 2 before you know the 10 that you can quote mm-hmm. back. So 90% of what we do is, what was your attitude like today, Charles? You know, did you follow our rules today? You know, you're up there in our chapel singing these songs, but you can't be hating on the guy that's your roommate and tell me that you're a Christian. So what we don't want to get so heavenly bound that we're no earthly good. We don't want them to just keep reading the Bible and have this mystical view of God. We want God to be real so that we know that nothing changes unless your heart changes, right? So everything we do comes from the heart. So basically, and you can hear the bells of heaven ringing behind me. Basically, what we do is we help our guys who have been unchurched, Tony. You know, I think the Bible talks about it. It says, look, you know, how can you talk about God but then see someone who needs clothing and feeding and don't give them anything? Yeah. You know, you've got to love in action and in truth, not just words and deeds. So what we do for our guys, the first thing we do is we show them the love of God. We bring them into the program. We give them support. The over 90% of them can't pay anything. You know, we don't ask them for a lot to invest. Our program, Tony, costs $24,000 when you come to insurance and room and board and liabilities. We never charge anyone that amount because the majority of the people, over 50% of people we serve, they would otherwise be homeless. Over 90% of them can't pay a dime. And that's the first thing they experience the love of God in is you're welcome. You don't have to bring anything to the table but you. You bring everything you got. Bring all that garbage, bring all that pain, bring all that hurt. Come to the table. We're here to help you. And that's the first real experience we want you to have with God. God is ready to accept you. You don't have to earn it. We're going to deal with your issues. But we want you to be real with God, too. We don't. Mm-hmm. One of the things, Tony, we don't force you to do is we don't expect. I've had guys who were atheists. I've had guys who didn't believe in God at all, who were angry at God. Well, God, the God I know wouldn't do this. And I said, well, you don't know God. You know, let's get to know him first before we start making all these conclusions about him. And one of the best ways we can get to know the unseen, let's have an example in the scene. And that's what we as a staff try to do is we try to love the men that come into our program. We try to serve them. And we try to take care of their family. We let them know, even when they fight against us, it's never going to be personal. We're here to help you. We're going to love you enough to tell you the truth. And sometimes the truth is not what's pleasing to your understanding or your way of thinking. The truth comes against the way you think. Yeah. But that's why we got to do it, because we love you. And, yeah. and sometimes they want to shoot the messenger, Tony. You know that. They want to. But we just keep coming. And that's the same thing God does for all of us. He just keeps coming. No matter what we do, we keep running. But eventually, he's waiting for us. And that's how the spiritual component really plays out. It's there for support. It's there for encouragement. And it's meant to be lived out so that when it comes to recidivism, reoffending, sobriety, that they can see a practical way to live out the word of God. That, what does that look like? Because we talk about, in the middle of a chapel service, we might talk about drugs. We might talk about something, because that's what's happening in life. You know, we have to talk about, how do you relate the word to the reality of the circumstances of the person who's coming off the street, who's never been to church, doesn't know God from anything. And the first representation of God we want them to know is, God is a God of accountability. Yes, he's a God of love and of mercy, but he's also a God not to be played with. And so we talk about all these types of things to get to a place of relationship and not a place of just religious talk and religious thinking and religious rules.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I have always been involved as myself learning in the very early part of my life, 25 years now in recovery and criminal thinking and all those things. And after 18 years of doing prison time and the streets and being shot, all those things, loving someone to help means that you have to be healthy enough as a deliverer to say, I can watch you grow without having to worry about you have to do it perfectly. And most of the time in the therapeutic process, people gets to the point where they have an expectation about when the guy should change. It's not on our time, it's on God's time.
That's right.
And that stuff that you said that comes up, it's supposed to come up after a year, because you can't hide from yourself forever. And you can do things good for a little while, but now, 9 months in, 10 months in, when the true you that you wake up with is getting up every morning, now the real you gonna come up, and that anger, frustration, things that made you sick now can't hide no more.
Right.
And I love that when you got counselors or therapeutic people who understand that process and say, you know what, it doesn't matter. I'll be here 2 years after you leave, 3 years after you leave, with the same love I offered you from day one, I'm offering you today. And that's what I love about the criminal thinking elements, that it keeps going back and ask the question, is this how you want to live?
Right. Right. Absolutely, Tony. It's a great point. You know, I tell you, our director and founder, William Washington, will say this over and over again. He said that God told him, the same grace that I have given you, in the same way that I've given it to you, go and give it to others.
Yeah.
Because that's why I gave it to you. You know, and it's exactly what you were just saying, is if you can't help someone come to a place of recovery and deliverance without being patient with him. Because like you said, it's going to be messy. There's going to be times where you're going to fall. A righteous man falls seven times, but he gets back up. You're going to have some setbacks. But at the end of the day, if you have a real relationship, is what we try to teach, a real relationship that you can go to God and you say, I messed up, but I know, I'm thankful, Lord, you still accept me. You know, and then you have people around you who actually live that. You know, they don't look at you with judgment. We always say this all the time. It's not personal. If I have to have a strong conversation with a student one day, the next day, I come and give him a hug. Just to show him that it is not personal. It was not personal at all. I'm here. I've got to tell you the truth, brother. The reason I got to tell you the truth is because I love you. And I'm going to show it to you today, just like I showed it to you yesterday.
I'd like to invite you back for another conversation, because I can tell with me you can go into a long conversation. But I want you to allow our listeners to have your contact information. Give us the contact information for Bridge Ministries, and let us know how we can get in touch with you and get some more information about the Bridge Ministry in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, Tony, first of all, I really want to thank you for the opportunity. I think what you're doing is fantastic, and we need more people like you in our country. I think our country could become an even greater place if more people thought the way you did and wanted to reach back and help. But that's for the next podcast. The way that you can get in touch with us is bridgeministry.info. Bridgeministry.info is our website. It's got testimonial videos. It has a way you can apply online if you know someone that needs our help. Remember, we're an 18-month residential program for helping men with life-controlling issues. And they come from all socioeconomic backgrounds, ages, and races. And we are about diversity and unity. And if you want to see it achieved, you're not going to get it without God. And that's where it starts.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been another segment of Our Criminal Thinking Deterred. Our guest has been Mr. James. And it was a beautiful conversation, right at my heart. If you want to get in touch with us here at Moore & Associates, you can give us a call at 262-605-1444 or email me at moreandassociates.biz. And at Moore & Associates, we offer assessments, intensive outpatient, aftercare, AODA, treatment, gang prevention, and other services as needed. We'd like to thank you for joining us. And please remember that God designed you for a purpose, and that's to serve Him and others. So have a blessed day.
This episode of Criminal Thinking Deterred was sponsored by Moore & Associates in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Call us at 262-605-1444 or email tmoore@moreandassociates.biz. Moore & Associates offers assessments, intensive outpatient, aftercare, alcohol and drug abuse addiction treatment, gang prevention, and other services. Tony is also available for speaking engagements and professional consultations. Come back soon for our next episode, and please remember, lifestyle changes begin in the mind.
Turned on him just as the odds had once betrayed.